Hi everybody and welcome back to the Agility Rose Talk and Train podcast. So before we get started, I would like to thank our sponsors Nailer Agility for their support. If you haven't heard of Nailer before, they're the UK's leading tunnel providers. They have a product for everyone with complete customization when purchasing from them. You can choose between heavy and lightweight, agility or hoopers spec, and much more. Each tunnel is flexible, durable, and suitable for indoor and outdoor use. Nailer have just launched their new Non-Slip Plus tunnels, which is an excellent product for our dog safety. The new Non-Slip Plus agility tunnels are constructed using a new, highly textured material, and the inside of the tunnel has a heavy textured finish and offers significantly more grip. Nailer have very kindly sent me a new Non-Slip Plus tunnel to trial for myself, which will be put to the test by my dogs. If you're interested in hearing more or want to learn about how I'm finding their new tunnel, please feel free to contact me via Instagram at Agility Rose. And without further ado, let's get into this episode. Thanks, guys. So, something a little bit different and new on this podcast. I had lots of requests, and so did Sam Lane as well, our guest who we discuss in this episode with. And there was lots of requests around having the how to find a puppy or the kind of favourite lines. And essentially we did go on to a bit of a tangent when it comes to breeding and finding your perfect dog, and also avoiding puppy farmers, which is really important at the minute as well. So we got requested if we could put that into a snippet so people can listen to that if they want to share it to friends and family members. So hopefully this is helpful. I would say it's definitely applicable to every breed. Obviously we talk about spaniels, so there's a little bit about spaniel lines there as well, but we also speak about puppy farms and searching and what to look out for and red flags and green flags. So I think it's applicable for many different breeds, so hopefully this helps. And any questions, do give us a shout and I'll do my best to help. But without further ado, we'll get into it and you can listen to this. If you want to listen to the rest of the recording, it is episode 19, Spaniels Get to Know the Breed. And without further ado, enjoy.
100%. And I think that'll be really helpful to have your kind of perspective on that for some of these questions, because it's, I think, especially obviously this episode being about spaniels, they do have those sensitivities and it does come in waves and stuff. So we had tons of questions sent in. I couldn't believe I was inundated on this one. So question one, what would you advise or warn someone about when they're considering getting a Cocker Spaniel for the first time?
Oh, wow. Well, the first thing I'd ask them is what they want and why, because I mean, Cocker Spaniels, I mean, I'm assuming you're talking about working Cocker Spaniels.
Yes.
Working Cocker Spaniels, I call them Pandora's box. That's why I love them. Yeah. They're just so different. You can have, you know, you'll have people that say, go get a Cocker Spaniel. They're great because mine just lies down all day and it's so easy. But then you'll have others that are like monkeys and they climb the furniture and they really test your patience. Yeah. And that's what I love about them. So I'd have to ask the person, like, why do you want them? It's crazy because when I first started, there was very few Cocker Spaniels doing agility. Mm. And I remember when I started, people came up to me because I didn't know. I just came in with dive and everyone came up to me and went, why would you get a Cocker Spaniel? All they do is sniff.
Really?
And I didn't even know that they did that. So in a way, ignorance is bliss, because I came in with, you know, Dimer's grade one, so it wasn't something I had to watch out for because I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's amazing that right now, like, all the classes are full of spaniels. Like, what turnaround.
Yeah.
And they're seen as a threat. They're seen as a competitive edge, which is amazing because they weren't at the beginning.
Oh, gotcha. I mean, every queue I think this weekend I've been in, there was at least, in a queue of 10, there was at least, what I would say, about five of them were at least spaniels, probably more than that, in fact.
Yeah.
When I was queuing for ABC, I think at the time, it was just all spaniels in my queue.
I love it. It really makes me smile because they were a breed that, you know, not everyone, but it was the biggest consensus of opinion was, no, why would you do that?
Wow, I never knew that, because I came in when they were probably getting quite popular. I came in 2014, so it would sort of started to spur on a little bit since then, but I had no idea they were such a kind of uncommon breed at the start. Wow.
It's just this is going back a long time, but yeah, there was a couple of people that were really successful, but really it wasn't. So and I just love my gun dogs. I mean, I've had gun dogs all my life,
and
Labrador. So that's why I went for a spaniel. I didn't see anybody compete because I started with grade one. My trainer, she had collies and Jack Russell. So yeah, so the biggest thing I say to people now is, you know, research your lines, because different I find looking at the pedigrees, it is, I think it's important to, if you look at working cross spaniels, sort of know their lines a little bit.
Yeah,
it gives you a good start, I think. And you can see sort of like there's certain lines I understand, not always, obviously, it's, you know, you always get your anomalies, but on the whole, there's certain lines that are well known for being a bit hard hunters, as they say in the field trial world, a bit fast, a bit, you know, quick on the, and therefore they can be very intelligent and hard to live with, you know, could be, I'm not saying they are, if you don't address what they need in their life. There's others that are really quite relaxed, loyal, very brave, and some that are known for being a bit, I'm not going to say sensitive because that's not right, but aware of the environment more than others.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I would say that.
Oh God. Yeah. And I think, like you said, it's a good point highlighting there that, you know, a lot of our breeders in the UK use still gundog lines, and obviously they're being bred for the gundog purpose and using their nose, so kind of being aware of what lines you're looking into and what those dogs are being bred for, I think that's super important. And that leads quite nicely onto our next one, actually, question wise, which is what are your favorite spaniel lines and what advice would you give to someone when they're researching breeders?
I'll be honest, this is personal preference, honestly. Because there's some cracking lines out there. And to be honest, the spaniel gene pool is tiny. So they all kind of go back really to probably about five lines. It's crazy how small the gene pool really is, if you look at any pedigree. But my favourite has to be I can't pronounce it very well because it's a Welsh word. Mysie Derwin. I think, Mysie Derwin. That's one of my favourite lines. I think they're the hardest to live with personally. But I love the challenge. My other favourite is, I love Tim's Gary. I'm not convinced they make the best agility dogs. I mean, I know Dime is Tim's Gary lines, but agility's moved on now and they can be quite heavier set. I mean, I love them, but they're very bold and they're very powerful. But I don't know if, like, if Dime had his day when he was around and he was amazing, I don't know if he'd be as competitive now, the way agility's moved on. I mean, I'm so lucky he was when he was there, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah, I know what you mean. I was only saying the same thing about my previous dog to compare if she was here now. How competitive, I mean, medium is just, it's a league of its own now. It's just incredible. The competition in that height now is insane. And I was saying how my spaniel, if he'd have come out when she came out, he probably would be grade seven by now. But because of the level of the dogs that we're seeing at the minute, it's just, it's brilliant to watch.
Yeah. I think Twiggy would hold her own still because she was incredible. She was so fast.
I remember watching some videos of because I obviously used to, well, you when you get into agility, you then get into the wormhole of watching old finals and stuff like that, and you just see dogs like that and you think, oh my god.
she gave me the fear. I have always been competitive in sports, but I've never suffered fear like I did when I ran her. I mean, I've overcome it now, which is why, you know, I would definitely get another one, but I was so scared. And when I started, because I was grade one. And although she came out technically grade three because Diamond won out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was only a couple of months earlier and I didn't know anything. I mean, and I remember people come, you know, judges going, oh, what a dog, don't mess it up. And they can pile on this pressure on you. And you're like, you just feel it. You're like, I know. But the thing is with Dime, when he ran, there was only, you could not control his speed. You just had to show him the course. There was no stopping him, no slowing him. But Twiggy would slow down if you wanted her to. And that's a double-edged sword because you knew she was so fast, but your mind couldn't cope with it. So you wanted to slow it down. And of course that messes it up anyway, doesn't it? And so she's definitely one of my favorite. And I just remember getting over my fear one day, just telling myself, well, you're ruining it anyway. and you know, and then the other thing I would say to myself is I would look at it and go, how can I make you faster? Because I think that turns the problem on its head. I was scared of her speed because I didn't feel like I can cope with it. But if you say to yourself, how can you make her faster? You're sort of saying subconsciously, you're fast enough. You need more. So I can cope with it. Does that make sense?
Oh God, yeah. Do you know what? I can quite relate to that actually. With my young dog, she's not a full cocker spaniel. She's half and half poodle, but very similar to run. That fear of like, oh God, yeah. I don't know if I can manage that. And then, as you say, that when I needed to slow down, she would. But that's a very good. Very good point.
I love that edge of control feeling I have now, but I didn't at the time. But I did get over it. She helped me get over it. But going back to the lines, there's a couple of lines I really should mention. I mean, Malladale, very athletic, very strong. And yes. I think they're showing up quite a lot in the agility spaniels now, and they just look stunning to look at. And there's a couple of dogs that if I see on the pedigree, I already know they're going to move well. I just know. Sometimes I can look at them and tell that they've got that in the background. And Walkley Reaver and Darndale Dealer are two dogs that I just love when I see in the pedigree.
Oh, God, yeah. I love the Walkley lines as well. They're really nice dogs there. And I quite like one I didn't come across until I was introduced to it through my breeder for my spaniel. Is the, I don't know if you've heard of the Tarn Crag lines, but they've got some, again, quite, you know, quite working, like, not maybe not stocky, they're nicely built, but they're heavier than, you know, some of the spaniels we could see in agility rings sometimes. But they come out really nice as well from what I've seen and what I've experienced.
And what I like about spaniels is I mean, you know, going back to one of the questions you're saying about the warning about, you know, the to people is the biggest thing that I come across is people wanting certain height for spaniels. And it baffles me. And I know I'm a hypocrite because the last current dogs were small, but genuinely I like running all heights. And the reason I kept Crash from my litter was because I wanted a medium height because I got two small girls. And so I like running all height. And I don't understand why everybody's so fixated on small, because when you look abroad, it doesn't matter if they're small or medium, they're so competitive. So to me, I'm like, just relax and just, you know.
And I think, like, sorry, you go ahead.
I was just going to say that they're quite, you can't predict, there's no way of looking at pedigree and say that dog will be. You can only hedge bets. They generally, you know, they're genuinely borderline, if I'm honest.
And I think I say it's such a good point, because if you're going into it for height, I sometimes think you're going into it for the wrong reason.
100%.
As we said, you do get, you know, quite variety in sizes with working cocker spaniels. That's, you know, it's just one of those kind of unpredictable things sometimes. But I definitely think kind of having that mindset of I only want a small, I think you're kind of setting yourself up for potentially a disappointment that, you know, you can't guarantee it. As you say, I mean, I've known dogs come out of two small parents and be top end medium. It's like you just can't guarantee anything.
and it baffles me, because look at James Adams, he's doing amazing.
When
Dime was around, he achieved everything that the collies, you know, at the time could achieve. I mean, it's just and it's your journey at the end of the day, and there's only room for one world champion. So I think you just got to enjoy your journey, if that makes sense, rather than, you know, only thinking the small's the easier way. It certainly isn't easy for me anyway. I think smalls are very competitive. You know.
Oh, God, yeah. And I also, because, again, my youngest one, she just happened to end up small. She's my first small out of a run of medium dogs. And honestly, I find her so much harder to run because I have no airtime whatsoever. She makes me run. She's faster than my other dogs, but also makes me have to do more work. So I quite like my mediums for that.
I just love running all heights. I mean, I'm not going to be hypocritical and say, I must admit, I mean, when I looked for Zippy, I was looking for a small, but that's only because I know it's harder. If she went medium, it's fine. It honestly is fine. I just love running all heights. So I love a small, a medium, and a large. I mean, I'm not going to run four dogs. I know we got intermediate. I think I'll stick with a small, medium, and an intermediate or large now. But I just love that challenge. And having a breed that you can live with as well is that's what I really want.
That is really important. And I think, like I say, with the breeder side of it, speaking to breeders about actually what's this dog like to live with, and also people who own them, because, you know, I mean, we both live spaniels, so when you know them, they're easier. But I think if you've never had one before, it's a bit of a shock to the system, I must admit.
It is. I remember when Dime and Twiggy, because don't forget they're only a few months apart, was, I think, 6 and 9 months, I think they were. And I remember sitting on my sofa with my head in my hands going, what have I done? Because they were just running riot. I didn't understand how to work their brains then. I just did agility and walking and that's it. And agility was like, you know, I used to go once a week and that sort of thing. So I didn't really use their brain that much.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't meeting their needs and I didn't know that. And actually, when you say 6 to 8, they weren't even doing agility at that time. So I just had two puppies running around the house. So I just remember it, you know, it's just hard work. And yeah, and I think if you hadn't faced that, you don't know that. And also, if you love the breed or love the personality, you don't care what problems come up.
Because, oh, God, no.
You've already got that bond. You'll work through it. But if you don't, I think you can resent it a little bit because you've sort of, but they're your tool. That's why they're not working. Does that make sense? And I don't like that way of living.
No, I 100% agree because, well, for context, with my Spaniel, I did three years of research before I got him. I got him when I was 19, but I'd been debating between Spaniels and Collies for a long time, but always begged for one, but it wasn't until I was older that it was, when it was more my responsibility that I was allowed one, but yeah, I just think you've got to really enjoy the breed and actually be around them because I think, you know, having a small glimpse of what they're like isn't maybe sometimes predictable of them all the time.
But that's also quite hard because they're so different, aren't they?
Yeah.
Some of them are so calm and chilled and some of them are just nutty and crazy.
Well, I was quite lucky because I worked in a doggy daycare from 16 to 19, so I got to experience all sorts of dogs in there, but one of our most popular breeds was working cockers, because obviously people who work and had got one and thought, I can't leave this dog at home all day, so they'd come to a daycare. I'm not saying I agree with daycares anymore, because and not that I agreed them at the time, but it was just a good experience for me. But the dogs that I was able to spend, you know, a whole day with different breeds and actually get to know them. And I think if people can have like an experience where you can maybe look after a friend's one or just spend a whole day with one, gives a much grander picture of what to expect. And also maybe that line wasn't suitable for you, but maybe a different one would.
It definitely goes a lot about saying like meet the litter, meet the mums and dads if you can, meet the brothers and sisters, talk to people who've had pups from those breeders before, you know, because people who have their dogs are quite passionate. They don't I don't see many hide, you know, good or bad experiences. They're honest if you talk to them. Breeders maybe not so, because you know they love their lines, don't they, and they love their dogs, and they only see like the best out of them. But you tend to see honesty from owners. They won't, because they've got they're not going to give you their dog, are they? So there's nothing to hide, is there?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm always very open and honest of if anyone ever asks me questions about mine, kind of what the pros and cons are and what kind of things I've had to work through with them. Obviously, each being an individual. But I think that's a really good point as well, speaking to actually the owners. And also maybe touching on it as well, because obviously there's been a huge surge on social media just recently about a particular breeder. But just doing your background research as well, looking on maybe MyKC and looking actually how many puppies are they having a year under that affix, and just really looking into and trying to get down to it.
It is hard to find because the Kennel Club have changed their website. It used to be really easy to look up a kennel name, and now it's impossible. It is really hard. But I find if you, because I've been looking for a pup for quite some time. So I've been using the health test finder. So if you can find at least one name there, you can quite often use it to look at the other dogs that they own through parents and siblings and what they've produced, and then you go through that, and it's amazing what you can find out through that. Because for me, my biggest bugbear is back-to-back litters. That's the big warning sign for me. Why do you need to like breed 6 to 8 months, 9 months straight after the litter? I mean, don't forget the pups are brewing for 9 weeks, so no sooner have they born, you know, you're waiting. It doesn't that's not nice. I don't understand why you can't wait. And that you will see that, because if you see the litter, you'll see how many litters they've had. And you only have to look at the days. Yes.
And I think as well, looking at how many litters a mum is having as well, you know, if they're pushing four, you start to think, if they're doing that regularly with all of their yeah. rugs as well, is this a lot? And I think as well, another great, I don't know if you've mentioned it, but the Cocker Spaniel database as well.
That's
fantastic for looking as well for different kind of lines and looking at the dog. And and I like that it includes pictures as well, some of them.
Yes, it does. I mean, someone's put mine up. I didn't upload some of my dogs. So it's really good. But the biggest thing I find actually is because you're in agility, everyone's your friend. It's a great community, isn't it? And I have bred a few litters, and I'm really not knocking the owners, honestly, because I've got the information if they want. But it's amazing when I have inquiries and things, how many they just take whatever I say, they just take it as truth. And I think I don't, you know, if in reality you've got this dog for hopefully a long time, like 10 to 15 years, 18 years, 20 years, some of them. Maybe not spaniels, but you know, Jack Russells and things. But yeah, you have them for a long time. It's worth doing the research. And it just baffles me that just because I've said they've got these tests, you're not, you know, nobody asks to see. Like when I give a puppy, I always give them all the copies of, of the certificates and things like that. But you know, it's worth like actually asking to see them, or asking for the numbers of them, or asking them how many dogs they own, how many dogs do they breed from. That's the number one, actually, because I don't mind if people ask me that. I haven't got anything to hide. Come and see me. I mean, quite often some people have asked to come and see my dogs and how they are, which is great because it shows me that they care not about my dogs, but they care like how their puppy's going to be. Does that make sense? Because they care about what
how they'll turn out.
It's a good indicator, isn't it?
Oh god, yeah. And I think as well with that, actually when a breeder wants to know more about you as well, I think that's a huge thing. So not just kind of offering you a puppy right off the bat, more if you know, I've kind of been on a few lists over the years with different dogs, and I really like when a breeder sends me a questionnaire and asks me I mean, I've been asked all sorts, and I don't mind as a potential puppy buyer, but I think it's so important that a breeder actually wants to know you and know where the dog's going.
Definitely. And also, I mean, come and see the part. I think it's harder for you know, when you're abroad trying to buy a puppy.
Yeah.
But we are a community. And I think it's, if you really want that pup from abroad, either go there and find out for yourself before you put your money down, or ask a friend to go and do it for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because don't take word for it, because it's rubbish. You know, you don't know. You just don't. You know, I could have my puppies in a dungeon for all you know, until you come and see me. And you know what? It is obvious when you come and see it. So I remember going to see Ninja Zippy's litter, and I brought a load of toys with me, and she had the puppies there, and it was obvious this is their home and everything. They were so at home there. They were happy. They were just, you know, everywhere. I mean, she was sending me videos anyway each day, but I brought a bag of toys because I was a bit naive then, and I just went, oh, let's see how they are with them. And I just emptied it out on the floor. What an idiot. And they all ran away.
Oh,
they all came out eventually, but they all ran away. And I was like, well, of course they would. It's all new. I've just thrown a load of new stuff in. So that to me is a warning sign. Like, it goes the other way. If the puppies aren't used to being in that environment, they will not act like confident and happy.
Yeah.
It's no excuses saying, oh, they're tired, they're this. Well, if they're tired and they're this, wait. Because if they're tired, they'll, you know, sometimes you do catch them, they're tired, but they will wake up, and then you'll see their true personalities, their puppies, everything's in tiny micro moments, aren't they?
Yes. Oh, God, yeah. 100%. And I just thought of another thing as well that I was going to say. What was it? Oh, it's one of those where it'll come back to me halfway through and I'll be like, oh, I wish I'd said that.
Well, the biggest thing for me is if a breeder's selling themselves to me, telling me they've got the greatest puppy. I remember getting a message years ago about, I've got the perfect puppy for you. This is just made for you. Da, 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 I'm helping you out in all this sort of thing. That's like warning signs, really, especially if they're not people that you go training with every single week, or going out socially, isn't it? If it's just somebody you compete with very, you know, occasionally at a show, that's not a true friend. So therefore, why have they got this perfect? How do they know what the perfect puppy is for me? They don't know me that well. They just know who I am in agility. They don't know me. So that to me speaks red alarms, doesn't it? And also, if you can't see the puppies, I'm sorry, no. And photos, videos don't do it. It's not good enough. It's definitely not going to. I mean, yes, they help. It's great. And you shouldn't go along it with true suspicion. But it is important that you are happy about where your puppy comes from, happy how it's raised, because it's not just about the puppy. It's about the mother and the dad that you leave behind.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. Because you do see it a lot where, I mean, I've visited a few litters in my time, and in terms of not even just for me, for maybe relatives. And, you know, it's sometimes people think if it's not the right thing, that they're protecting the puppy by taking it.
Yeah, actually take it out of the environment, they're saving it. No, you've just condemned another puppy to face it. And the mother, parents, another year.
Yeah, 100%. And it's quite sad. But yeah, I think definitely researching as much as you can get information-wise. And I couldn't agree more about not being able to see the puppies being a huge red flag, because I've had that before. And straight away, I was like, nothing else for that person.
Puppy farming and badly bred puppies can stop right now if every buyer follows similar protocols.
It
just becomes too hard. And if anything's too hard, it doesn't happen. So I don't understand. Like, I understand that we, you know, that people want to breed and all that lot, and they want big kennels. And I don't, you know, I struggle with it, but I don't really have a big problem with it, as long as the dogs that stay there are clean. But also they have mental stimulation, so they're doing something, not just festering in a clean kennel, churning out puppies. They're doing something. They're getting walked and worked and that sort of thing. That's quite important to me. But it's so, you know, if people made it harder and made it like, you know, everybody did the same thing, then the breeders, it just wouldn't be worth their while, because it would cost too much to maintain what they need to do to sell the puppies. So it really, it is the power is with the people, not with the breeder. That's why breeders take shortcuts the way they do. You know, I'm not naming names, I'm really not, it could be anybody. I'll meet in the motorway because it will save you the journey. I know you've got a long journey, so I'll bring the puppy to you. No problem to me. I mean, hello. You've got it 15 years. Go drive up to Scotland if you live in Cornwall. It's worth it.
100%. I mean, I've done Wales, I've done all sorts to go get my puppies, but I couldn't agree more. I think that, again, like you say, with service stations and stuff, huge red flag. Unless you've had a friend actually visit and see them in person and stuff, it's just straight away a red flag.
I'm not Yeah, again, I could be hypocritical. I have delivered a puppy, but the owners have been in my house.
Yes.
Seen my puppies before. I just happened to be in the area the day that, you know, the week that it was ready. So, but they've already been to my, I always make every person that's ever bought one of my puppies I've had in the house, they've seen them whilst the puppies are there, not before, whilst the puppies were here. I wouldn't have it any other way, including people that come from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Like you said, and from a breeder's perspective as well, you want them to come see you, because if people aren't wanting to visit, you want to know where your puppy's going and that they're invested. So 100%. And I think there's a huge law in, isn't there, Lucy's Law, am I speaking right? So I'll try and put a link on this podcast anyways, if anyone wants to look at that, about looking out for puppy farms, because sometimes they are very well hidden and people can be duped, and puppy farmers are getting more and more intelligent.
They hire out houses now, so it looks all set up, and it's incredible what goes on now. But the biggest thing in agility that saddens me is I think some people are willing to cut corners for perceived success.
Yes, yeah.
And that's what worries me.
Yeah.
Because it's not a done deal. It, you know, how many puppies were bred for those few that made it to the top?
100%. You can't guarantee anything. When there's thousands of puppies, of course there's going to be one or two in there that are going to make something a success, but it's just not worth it for those hundreds of puppies that have had that lifestyle of not had a life, really.
And the last thing I've got to say is also I think it's important that all of us play a role, like all of us. So if you know, if you've done your research and you suspect that the puppies aren't raised, or the parents aren't in the lifestyle that they should be, and things aren't right, but you think that they're successful, you can get your dog now or something like that, or it's something that you want. We all have a responsibility of how that looks around us, because some people, you know, your friends look at you, look up to you as well, don't they? Take advice. And if you do in the sport, people look at you and go, well, look what they've got and look what they've done, where they've got it. So So we all bear that responsibility as well. And it saddens me that people are willing to sell their morals, really, for this, even though, you know, other people look at you as well and think, well, they're doing it, so I can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as I said, power's in the people. If we all stick to our guns and insist on it, even if you want it from those breeders, but you insist on that way and you won't have it any other way, then maybe things will change. Maybe.
Oh, God, yeah. And I also think as well, it's very, because I mean, we're very fortunate in the UK that spaniels, there are a lot of them, and a lot of people breeding them, and a lot better than others. But also, like you say, with them being so closely related, if you've got a bad feeling about a particular breeder, but you know that line's okay, you can get can find a puppy so similar and from
almost just look at the grandparents.
Lines. Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Because they've all come from the grandparents. Yeah. The other thing I will say though is there's a couple of and I'm not going to name names. You really need to do your research, but just watch social media. Just because it looks like the puppies are in playful living rooms and doing all this, it doesn't take much to look at, you know, as I said, I use my health test finder. It doesn't take much to find out that those breeders that may not be breeding as many litters. Well, a puppy, you know, when you're looking at ethics, when did it start? When did the bad ethics start? It usually starts from good breeding and then money's made. And then greed comes in, possibly, and then the boundaries break, and then more litters happen. You can't manage it so well, so it's not as clean. You have too many dogs around. Do you see what I mean? This is where it spirals.
It just spirals, yeah.
100%. Yeah, and where does it start? And so for me, the warning signs are always heavy marketing, social media showing amazing living rooms or house environments, playful, all this sort of thing. But actually, once you look at them, there's dogs that they have in there that have had back-to-back litters, three or four litters, 6 months, 8 months, 6 months. That's a warning sign to me. Move away.
Oh, gotcha. 100%.
So, yeah, because that's the start. Or if they're suddenly buying in a load of dogs.
Yes.
Why do you suddenly need to buy them? And why are you breeding from them like literally weeks or a month, you know, after getting them? Why? You haven't had enough time to see what their temperament's like, to see if it's right to breed from them. So that tells me that your motivation is money only. Mm. And that's another warning sign. So, you know, just do your research and then I think it's relatively easy then to stay on the right track. I don't buy all this, oh, I was taken in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think all of us have such, I mean, like I say, it's a huge responsibility because you're taking a dog that's going to be the next 10, 15 years of your life. And also, as you say as well, if that dog's going to do well, people are going to look at it. And do you want to be tied to that person and that breeder for the remainder of that dog's life? It's there's a lot to it, especially in agility.
Yeah, it matters. It really matters. And it helps everybody, I think, if we all stick together and look for good lines, good dogs, healthy dogs, you know, because we've got, I mean, agility is not saving lives. Mm. There's no excuses, really, if I'm honest, to not have, well, you know, nice dogs that are brought up well. We owe it to them.
Oh, God, yeah, 100%. Mm. And if, you know, like I say, if you want a dog that's going to enjoy a career in agility, health and the way where they're raised and all the kind of aspects that come with it are so important for that. So amazing. Yeah.